Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
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 Jai
Advaita
Chandra Jai
Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 25, The Residents of Varanasi, Become Vaishnavas, Text 73. Shishtahaya kena kore nirabandham. Try. Oh, that's not on your board. Amar sarvanasaya tumi brahmasam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "You are a great personality. Great spiritually advanced personality, and therefore you cannot worship a person like me. I am inferior. If you do so, my spiritual power will be diminished, for you are as good as the impersonal Brahman." Text 74. Jajjapi tumar sabe brahma samabhase loka shikalagiyache karite naise. My dear sir, for you everyone is on the level of impersonal Brahman. But for the enlightenment of people in general, you should not behave in that way. Teno kaha tumar purve ninda aparada ye karila tumara charanishparse sabakshaya gela. Prakashananda Saraswati replied, "Formerly, I committed many offenses against you by blaspheming you, but now the effect of my offenses are counteracted by my touching your lotus feet."
Jivan mukta apipunar yanti sansarvasanam yadyachinta mahashaktu bhagavati aparadinam.
If a person considered liberated in this life commits offenses against the reservoir of inconceivable potencies, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he will again fall down and desire the material atmosphere for material enjoyment. Before we read this verse, I'll just give a little introduction. We are in the middle of a pastime where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Benares or Varanasi. He met there with the Mayavadi sannyasis who were of the understanding that nothing is real except Brahman. And thus, they, for a long time, were following a process of philosophical adjustment. Because when you see that everything is one, you need to make some philosophical adjustments, because what we perceive with the eyes is different. We're seeing so many varieties, so many forms. So only by some mental adjustment can one see the oneness of everything. Therefore, the Upanishads are particularly reminding us of that aspect of reality, that there is an underlying, all-pervading spiritual energy. Therefore, these Mayavadi sannyasis were spending their time endlessly studying Upanishads and such literature, or the Vedanta Sutra, which is like a summary of these conclusions. And that was their preoccupation. And thus, they were expertly seeing that wherever there was variety, that it was false, and that the only thing that was real was the one all-pervading spiritual energy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into contact with them and began to eventually change their mind. Different things transpired, but amongst that, there was a discussion. And in this discussion, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to give an explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. And in that explanation of the Vedanta Sutra, he gave a direct explanation of the Sanskrit words. See, in Sanskrit, or like in any language, sometimes if a direct meaning doesn't make sense, you have to give some interpretation. For example, the house is built on the Ganga.
Now the house, how can a house be built on the Ganga?
So then it means the house is built on the banks of the Ganga. It takes that little bit of interpretation. So Shankaracharya had taken the text of Vedanta Sutra and twisted it around and interpreted it and came up with this commentary. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave a direct explanation, simply straight. So everyone was amazed because they thought it wasn't possible. So the disciples of Prakashananda, who was the leader of 60,000 sannyasis, they were amazed. And they realized what we're hearing now is superior to anything we've ever been taught before. And their minds were swayed. And they accepted the conclusion that Brahman is indeed the all-pervading one energy, but that it is the energy of Krishna. It is an energy. It is not Krishna himself. It is the effulgence of Krishna, known in scriptures as the Brahma-jyoti. So to be refined in the Isupanishad, in a well-known verse, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyashipitam Mukam Tattvam Pusanna Pavinu Satyadharmayena Vishyate, where it is said, please take away your dazzling effulgence and show me your true face, oh my dear Lord. So here we're seeing Brahman, that all-pervading spiritual energy, that light that we have read about in so many New Age books and heard about on so many occasions from various voices from India, that Brahman, which has been depicted as the divine white light we have heard, the all-pervading divine love we have heard, right? You know, divine life. We've heard all these things, and now we understand it for what it is, the energy of Krishna. Why didn't we think of that before? It's only an energy, and therefore, as an energy, see, there is this one little philosophical hitch, this one little complication which Shankaracharya pointed out. It is the rope and snake analogy, where Shankaracharya says, we're in the dark in an Indian village, right? And there are cobras out there, and you're just walking, and it is just too dark to see clearly, but you see this sort of like curved form on the ground, and now the mind goes, is it a rope or is it a snake? It's not sure. Either a rope or a snake. Shankaracharya says, it's a rope. It's a rope because a rope is always a rope. Brahman is always Brahman. And therefore, when you see that Brahman has turned into something else, it cannot be because Brahman is Brahman. It cannot change. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. Since Brahman is the energy, it is the energy of the Lord. The Lord doesn't change, but his energy can change. So Brahman can change. Therefore, all these forms that we see here and that we meet, they are real. So when you hit your head against a low doorpost, it's real. The head is real, and the doorpost is also real, and the headache is real as well. Although all the planets that you might be seeing there are not real. Anyway, so in this way, we get a little bit of understanding. Prakashananda, who was the leader of all these impersonalist sannyasis, he also, after hearing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had undergone a transformation. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after meeting with all these impersonalist sannyasis, performed a great kirtan right there on the banks of the Ganga. Many people came And it became totally ecstatic. Everyone danced and everyone was experiencing great symptoms of ecstasy, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greater symptoms than anyone else. And the hairs on his body were standing on end, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was displaying the greatest symptoms of love of God. It was at that time that Prakashananda Saraswati came. The others were already there, but Prakashananda came later, and Prakashananda took a very humble position. And he actually came in a mood of begging forgiveness. So he wanted to touch the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a sign of submission to him. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu avoided him quickly and rather tried to touch the feet of Prakashananda instead. And then some discussion unfolded where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins to speak and says, "You are a great spiritual advanced personality, and therefore you cannot worship a person like me. I'm far inferior. If you do so, my spiritual power will be diminished, for you're as good as the impersonal Brahman." See? Now he's testing him. He's seeing, has he really transformed? Has he really changed? Or is he still thinking that Brahman is everything? Is he still, for so long, he was habituated to this philosophy, to see everything as all one. Now he may appreciate the personal feature, but has it thoroughly penetrated, or still some impersonalist tendencies remaining within him? It is said that a good physician, right, he cannot leave one trace of the disease. He must root it out completely. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in this way, making arrangements to make sure that the disease of impersonalism was thoroughly rooted out. It is interesting that Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, right, and that he himself gave that mantra which described his mission. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachayane Nirvisesha Sunyavani Pasyachade Satayane. Then he comes to drive out voidism and impersonalism from the Western world. Western world. But I thought that that India had the monopoly to impersonalism. I thought that in India, the altars, an altar in India is like an Indian train. There's not enough space. Yeah. The altar is just full with unlimited pictures, unlimited deities, and so many. Because, you know, you never know. You never know. It might work, you know. So put it there just in case. Yeah? And it doesn't matter. You can put any deity because in the end, they're all manifestation of the same one. Yeah. No problem. So we thought like that. We thought that India had the monopoly to impersonalism. So surprising that Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world to drive out impersonalism. Of course, we have noted that things get a bit impersonal sometimes. For example, in the winter, in the train, when people are not looking at each other directly, but are looking at each other's reflection in the window. And you feel these eyes, and then you look at the window and see someone's looking at you. Let's quickly go down. It gets a bit impersonal. No one speaks. No one says a word. We are all strangers. Unlike India, where it's one big family, you know? In India, they talk, they sit together. That's Indian culture. So, more family. Yes, impersonalism we find deeply rooted in the Western world. We see that Christianity, which sort of began to spread across Europe somewhere between like 300 and year 1000, gradually Europe became Christian, and with that, all the gods disappeared. See, before there were elves, yes, there were trolls, there were all kinds of interesting creatures, dwarfs and so on, right? But they were all sort of, yes, you know, degraded to a little corner of the fairy tale, and that was all that was left for them, right? And no other deities than the one God were there. Some angels, maybe, but that was it. So with that, suddenly, the wind became just an impersonal force. No longer was there some deity with big cheeks blowing as the tiles on the roof were shaking, and you could pray to that deity. No, now it was just wind. Yes, all these things gradually became impersonal. And thus, we developed slowly it became more and more impersonal. I got into that during the last few weeks and discussed how when the brothers Wright invented the plane and flew above the clouds, there's no heavens there, no angels, no hearts, nothing. Yeah? A big disappointment, you know. When in India, in Bombay, the American astronaut Neil Armstrong visited, journalists asked him if he had a religious experience while he was up there in outer space. And Neil Armstrong said that, well, no, sorry, I didn't meet him. Maybe he was just on the other side of the universe. Right? So there's always been this idea that somewhere up there, you know, above the clouds, there's God. Then, when with planes we didn't see him, then maybe higher. Then maybe astronauts would see him, but even they didn't see him. What to do? So gradually the ground was prepared. First get rid of all the deities, and all the right 10 ones keeps on standing, and then you only have to knock that one over. Anyway, so Christianity eventually gave up the whole idea of a personal God and said, like, that's sort of a primitive understanding. But rather, God is all-pervading love. Harps start playing, everything. Beautiful. A moment of silence. Anyway, so impersonalism is widely spread everywhere. Impersonalism is found, one can find a whole trace of impersonalism through the Western world. You know, you can find for example, St. John of the Cross. You know, you read, like Darkness of the Soul. Unfortunately, he also thinks that he is Tatwam Asi, I am that too, God. Yes. We can look in Germany at Meister Eckhart, who was banned for his heretics of considering that a living being can become God. So impersonalism indeed existed in many features. The hippie movement also, right, started out like that, with Aldous Huxley as the doors of perception as one of the prophets, or Jack Kerouac, who was like completely into Buddhism. And Prabhupada, when he began to preach in the Western world, he widely encountered impersonalism. And impersonalism, yes, it's comfortable. It's comfortable. Because, really, as Ramakrishna summed it up, yatama tatapat, whatever you wish, that is your path. So that's kind of convenient. mine's rock and roll. It's a bit old-fashioned, but still going strong, you know. Just like the Rolling Stones. What to say? Different features, different approaches, right? Easy then, manufacture your own religion. Now that sort of rings well, sits well with modern man who kind of doesn't like to surrender and likes to just do what he wants himself. So this is the age of homemade religion and not the age of scripture. And little by little, strip off all these external rituals and go to the core, the individual experience. We were having a program in South Africa with a group of people who were all teachers in various New Age processes. And there was one group, husband and wife actually, they were heading up in South Africa the process of the primordial scream. I don't know if you're familiar with the primordial scream. It's sort of old hat these days, but anyway, it is a process. It is the concept of it is that everyone, they explained to me, they said it's beautiful, you know. Everyone has its own original sound. And when you just find that sound and let it burst out of your heart, it will liberate you from all material entanglement. So, this is amazing. I said, this is amazing. Amazing, I said. You know, I mean, look at the similarity, I said. You know that the essence of our process is also sound. They said, really? I said, yes, yes, yes. It's all about mantra, about how the sound can deliver the mind. I said, but we all, instead of all chanting a different sound, we all chant the same mantra, the same one, but we do it all in our own individual way. Oh, that was so beautiful. They were deeply touched. That was wonderful. Wonderful. So, I remember that exchange. Yes. So, many of us also, along with Prakashananda, who is now coming before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and who is now being tested, we may also be tested. Right now, as the curtains have opened, and as we are looking at Sisi Radha Gopinath, what are we seeing? Stone? When we see the deity as stone, according to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the heart of such a person is made of stone. But what do we see? And to what extent are we appreciating? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into the Jagannath temple in Jagannath Puri and came before Lord Jagannath, we have on the right side Lord Jagannath installed by Srila Prabhupada in Amsterdam in 1972. And we can see when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came before Lord Jagannath, he saw Krishna. He saw Krishna. And not only did he see Krishna, but he understood fully. He understood fully who Krishna was. And he fully appreciated Krishna's amazing qualities and nature. And being in the mood of a devotee, although he was the Supreme Lord himself, he at that point became overwhelmed by loving ecstasy. And he was ready to dive onto the altar. Not just stand there with folded hands. You know, taking the darshan. No, he was ready to jump on the altar and embrace the Lord. So for a moment, let us just see how in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was no impersonalism. He was fully
appreciating the personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada mentions how in deity worship we are practicing to again serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because for so long we have become conditioned by impersonalist philosophy. Again, we're learning how to serve the Lord personally. Then Vyasananda was now being tested by the Lord. So the Lord said, "Oh no, you should not try to touch my feet, you should not worship me, because you're a great personality. For you're as good as the impersonal Brahman." And I'll see if he would say, "Well, in fact, it's good that you know." But Prakashananda did not snap back into his old ways. Prakashananda Saraswati replied, "Formerly, I committed many offenses against you by blaspheming you. But now the effect of my offenses are counteracted by my touching your lotus feet." He is pointing out, yes, for a long time he had said this, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just a sentimentalist chanting and dancing instead of studying the scripture. We should study the Upanishads. We should just go deep into the philosophy so that we can develop the eyes of a philosopher and see deeper than face value and see how everything in this world is false. Now Prakashananda had been transformed. And he said, "If a person considered liberated in this life commits offenses against the reservoir of inconceivable potencies, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he will again fall down and desire the material atmosphere for material enjoyment." So now he's giving a conclusion. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead, here is the Lord, he is a person. He is like a person, but not a person of this world. Because the personalities of this world are limited. How far can you see? How high can you jump? How much can you eat? Let's see, breakfast is approaching. Let's see, how much you can eat. And what it will do to you when you eat too much. Yeah. Then just 5 minutes rest. Let's see. So limited. Personality appears to be limited. That's the problem the impersonalists have. As soon as you speak about the personality of Godhead, that personality is limited. Limited form. Mother Yasoda asked Krishna, "So, Krishna, everyone is saying you have eaten clay." "Oh, mother, it's totally not true. Today we had a fight in the forest, and now they're all making politics against me. Right? I never ate clay. How can they say such a thing?" "Krishna, not very convincing. Even your elder brother Balaram is saying it." "Oh, mother, you don't believe me, your own son. Oh, I'm deeply hurt." "Then, if you don't believe it, you look in my mouth. See if you see any clay in my mouth." And Mother Yasoda looked in Krishna's mouth, and what did she see? Not just a little bit of clay. I mean, whole planets made of clay. A whole universe he saw in his mouth. And thus, And then she looked further, and she saw herself, and she saw Krishna in his mouth, and she saw that she was looking in Krishna's mouth. And when she looked into that mouth, she saw again the whole universe, and she saw again herself looking into Krishna's mouth. And it's just going on like many levels. And Mother Yasoda started to think at that moment, "What happened to you? Did I just become crazy?" You're like, "Well, it doesn't make sense, right? Because I have no history of
insanity, and why would I just go insane right now that I'm looking in his mouth?
Would it be the demigods that would be like performing tricks, you know, and doing some mystic here, something magic?
That cannot be. Why would the demigods interfere in the life of an ordinary woman like me?
Then, if I'm not mad, then, if this is not the work of the demigods, then, is Krishna really not an ordinary person? Then, is he maybe the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And then maybe, am I not his mother? And then maybe, are all these residents of Vrindavan not my subjects? And then...
She stood there for a moment, like her head spinning, after she saw that.
And it was something, because she saw the Supreme Lord, who is supposed to be the origin of everything within the universe, walking within the universe.
But then she looked in his mouth, and then she saw that the universe was within him. How about that? Very significant. Krishna is within the universe, and yet the universe is within him. Think about that one.
So that's interesting. That story is illustrating how Krishna is the sum total of everything. How the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not limited like an ordinary person, but how that person is unlimited.
Prakashananda.
Because he was a great, great philosopher. Prakashananda didn't need much time to understand that point. Once he had been convinced about the personality of Godhead, he understood that. That became clear from his statement. We're dealing here with the reservoir of inconceivable potencies.
Yadi achintya mahashakto, the possessor of inconceivable spiritual potency. Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes. And then he understood very well. He said, and offenders will fall down and again desire the material atmosphere for the material enjoyment. So here we go.
So, did we ever connect that, being an offender and a material enjoyer?
Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy.
Did we always think it was just because we were so attracted to this material energy? Or do we realize that it's the offenders who are like sinking down deep into this propensity to enjoy the material world?
Sometimes you look at an assembly of Vaishnavas
and sometimes you think, oh, look at this illustrious, assembly. Look at all these personalities. Somehow or other, they came to Krishna consciousness. Some, early in their life already, were connected with Krishna consciousness. Some, later, some were even born into it. And then, just for a moment, we think, who were all these Vaishnavas?
In their last life, or in previous lives, who were they? Were they already Vaishnavas before? Are they now continuing their devotional service? Nehavikram nasasti pratyavaya nichite svagam abhi asyaramasya
taite mahato bayat. There is no loss or diminution in this process. We continue our devotional service from where we left off.
It is said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that generally speaking, we continue our devotional service from a previous life. Then, who is here? Could you just for a moment just do a little bit of regression here? If only I was good at hypnotism, I would hypnotize you all right now and take the whole room back to their last life.
And just imagine.
I remember that one of my disciples went to such a session, and then the hypnotizer said that, yes, he, Brahmachari, male disciple. He said, yes, maybe in your last life you were a woman. And he looked down at his feet and he was wearing like red, like female shoes. Oh my God, who were we? You know, Mataji. You know, who were we in our last life? Did we ever think about it? Like, realizing that maybe they are not extraterrestrials after all, maybe we ourselves were one of them. Gosh, ever thought of that? Anyway, all these things may be possible when we think about previous life. So, were we devotees in our previous life? Well, if we were, then we didn't make it. Yeah? Then we blew it. Sorry to say, you know. If we were a devotee in our last life, well, we missed the boat. We didn't go back to Godhead. Oh boy, why? Sometimes if you look now, you can already see the tendencies which were the stumbling blocks in last life re-emerging again. The same stumbling blocks are back. Oh my God, am I going to make it this time? And if not, I have to start again. The whole thing, all over. Rather not, perhaps. Oh God, sit at a dinner table with unedible things in front of you and a parent that tells you you have to finish your plate. I remember those dreaded moments. Oh gosh. But the poor children in Biafra, you can give it to them. Anyway, back to so maybe offenses also have contributed. Maybe offenses have contributed. Maybe carelessness in dealing with Vaishnavas in general. Maybe just that critical tendency, critical thinking, critical speaking, maybe just that, right? Disrespect could have contributed to where we are now, entrenched in the material atmosphere with strong desires for material enjoyment. Interesting. So many things in these verses. Anyway, we'll continue now. And after this lead-up, we will check today's verse, because... and then begin and end the lecture. Savai Bhagavata Srimad.
Savai Bhagavata Srimad.
Adisparsa Tasubha.
Adisparsa Tasubha.
Vijisarga Bhunitva.
Vijisarga Bhunitva.
Rupam Vijadar Architam.
Rupam Vijadar.
Being touched by the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, that serpent was immediately freed from the reactions of his sinful life. Thus, the serpent gave him his body and assumed the body of a beautiful Vijayadhara demigod. Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.34.9. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, under the leadership of Nanda Maharaj, once went to the bank of the Saraswati on a pilgrimage. Nanda Maharaj was fasting, and he lay down near the forest. At that time, a serpent who was formerly cursed by Angira Rasa Rishi appeared. This serpent had formerly been named Sudarshan, and it had belonged to the Gandharva Loka planet. However, he joked with the Rishi. He was condemned to take on the body of a big snake. When this serpent attacked Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj went to call, "Krishna, help!" Krishna immediately appeared and began to kick the serpent with his lotus feet. Due to being touched by the Lord's lotus feet, the serpent was immediately freed from the reactions of his sinful life. Being freed, he again assumed his original form of Sudarshan, the Gandharva. Next verse I read also. Prabhukahe Vishnu Vishnu Amik Sudra Jiva Hina Jiva Vishnu Mai E Aparadachina. When Prakashananda supported himself by quoting the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately protesting by uttering the holy name of Lord Vishnu. The Lord then presented himself as a most fallen living entity, and he said, if someone accepts a fallen conditioned soul as Vishnu, Bhagavan, or an incarnation, he commits a great offense. But Prakashananda was not to be deterred. The change was thorough. He had understood the darkness of ignorance had been removed. So many of us are walking around in darkness of ignorance. We eat things that are unedible, but we never thought about it. We drink things that are undrinkable, and we never thought about it. We do so many things like that. We worship deities that are unworshipable, or may not be complete features of the truth, may not be the complete. We accept Brahman as the ultimate without understanding that Brahman has its origin in Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Anyway, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now that ignorance which has covered people in a in its totality. Now the whole world is covered. Yesterday I saw this clip about football, and every once in a while the fever is sort of worked up by the media, and we see little flags appearing on cars, and we see like people getting excited and so on. And what shall we say? When we speak about football, I'll give Prabhupada's comment on football to you. And that is that we think that we are players, when in actuality we are the ball, because we can be kicked out of here any moment. Okay, that sums that up. And now we can move on from the darkness of football to the light of Krishna consciousness, and just simply take up the process of glorifying Krishna, the process of Harinam Sankirtan. And that is so absorbing that in the end there's just no time left. No time left. And he said, just no time for anything. Just Harinam Sankirtan. Okay, with that I've tried to explain this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If anyone has a question or a comment, most welcome.
Thank you, Maharaj. About that little past life regression.
That little?
Past life regression. because thinking that if we, it's nice to feel that we were Vaishnavas in the last life, so it gives kind of an option to become a little proud, and also, and also. About then, what is the role of Srila Prabhupada? Because there's the quote, Prabhupada said that he created our good fortune.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. So we still don't know what we were in our last life. That's what you say. Yes, very true. You can go to India and you can meet a Bhrigu reader. And if they find the scroll, you know, sometimes they have to look for a long time, so then you have to give an extra donation. But when you give that, usually they find it. And then you can see that in your last life, you were either a prince, a queen, a king, or a sannyasi, or some great spiritual personality
who somehow or other made a slight mistake for which you had to come back in the Hare Krishna movement as a punishment. anyway, so
just see.
Okay. So if you go by Grigo, you might indeed find that in the last life you were there. The only one doubt I have is that so far, never in any of the scrolls so far was it found that the devotee was a dog in his last life who somehow or other got prasad and then turned back, or like, you know, or a Vaishnava spat and that landed just on the head of a worm who in this life came back, you know, as a sannyasi from the Netherlands. Yeah, so by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, one can even be lifted up from animal existence to a human form in continued devotional service. Whatever we were in last life, whether we were devotees or not, it wasn't enough to go back to Godhead, and still the same predicament was here. And we were not just, we took birth in sinful Kali Yuga because we were sinful. And it was Prabhupada who awoke the desire in us to get serious and to even think about going back to Godhead. Yeah. So your point is nice. But both are possible. We could have been devotees in the last life. There's still a good chance that there's a continuation of many lives.
Just to finish it off.
Okay, I'll finish it off for you. One does not exclude the other. So the fact that Srila Prabhupada said, I am creating your pious activities, does not exclude that in a last life we were either a devotee or a non-devotee, even in the lower species of life. That statement doesn't exclude any of these options. That's my last word on it.
Yeah, and maybe then the other aspect of we are here from the past to do the mission. You know, that again gives a chance to be proud. I'm here in Kali Yuga, because you just mentioned that we are fallen, we are in Kali Yuga, we didn't make it. Well, maybe we didn't make it because we needed to do some more preaching work.
Oh, well,
to go around that one.
I mean, that's very optimistic. whoever thinks like that needs a reality check. That should settle that. Any other questions?
Demigods, the Christians just kind of chopped off everything, and there was only the one big God, and then everything became so personal.
Yeah.
And well, for me, it's very difficult to always remember Krishna, but it's more easy for me to remember that, you know, the wind is a person and the river is a person, just to see everything in a personal way.
That's good.
And to have a try to connect with these personalities, because they are Krishna's servants. So I just wonder if that's okay as a step to come to the remembrance of Krishna.
Sure. So to summarize, the question is, I spoke about the demigods that sort of were removed by the cross. And she's expressing that she sometimes finds it difficult to always remember Krishna, and in a way easier to see the personalities of behind the forces of nature. And yes, we are immediate, they're very close to us. The wind is here, the rain is here, the sun is here. That, Surya Namaskar. It's rarely performed here in Radhadesh. They have the odd moments, you know, that just for a few seconds you can indeed, you know, fold your hands facing the sun. Yes. So whatever. Yes, it's immediately in front of us. But then Vaishnavas are also philosophical, and means they're also seeing deeper than the external. So then we see, yes, here are all these demigods, and they are all devotees of Krishna, and they are all serving Krishna, and they are all using their powers of nature to serve Krishna. And suddenly our whole experience of reality changes. If you read Nietzsche, you know, which I don't recommend, but if you do, if you have absolutely nothing better to do, then you may find that Nietzsche describes that man finds himself in a hostile universe. You know? Here's this universe, and you just don't know what it will do to you any moment. You can be attacked by a meteor or by some virus. Macrocosmos, microcosmos, all surrounded, right? Beware, guard yourself. Did you get inoculated? All right, you know, are you prepared, right, for the meteor? Yes, we shoot them out of the sky. Zap them with huge laser beams, no problem. We are ready. Nuke the meteors. Right? So, man in a hostile universe, always defending. That's our culture. But when we are actually appreciating that the forces of nature are controlled by the demigods, who are servants of Krishna, then we begin to appreciate that actually nature will behave harsh for the non-devotees. And nature starts to behave more and more harmonious and friendly for the devotees. And thus, we see, suddenly, we find a new path. Not a path of war with our environment, but a path of living in harmony with our environment. So it's very important to restore the demigods to their proper positions and respect them and see them as Krishna's devotees. Then we see the whole universe in a devotional context instead of a big machine, a mechanistic model of the universe. Yeah. Well, so much for all that. So I thank you for being here with us on this Sunday morning in Radhadesh. I hope you are enjoying your stay here. It's very nice. It's a peaceful place. Peaceful places are rare. And in this place, Krishna is in the center. And undoubtedly, in a very beautiful, attractive form, Radha Gopinath. So if somehow or other we can, while we are here, do a little service for Radha Gopinath, or a lot, then we come to the key of what personalism is all about.